David Rowe. So, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Just take a couple of minutes.
It's all right. Just while you're getting settled, you know, we've read the original submission, so you don't need to reread that out to us, but you're very welcome to speak to it and highlight your key points for us.
I've actually only got three copies of some maps in there. It'll be up on the phone, but you might like to make one in front of you as well.
Thank you.
We'll share one.
You'd like one.
You need to
share
one.
Have you lost all the... No, we're going to get a copy.
Okay. Oh, well, good morning and thank you for the opportunity. And by way of introduction, my name is David Rose. We farm three blocks of land at North Hope in central Southland. I farm in partnership with my wife Helen, and we have farmed our river property, which is the basis of the map. For many years in our family, over 90, and we've lived on that property since 1991. I would also like to say that we farm in a passionate way about the environment. I have a belief that you need to leave the land in a better state than when you started. And also over those years that we've been farming, and I guess I've been farming since the late 70s, early 80s, we've made huge productivity gains. We've brought on composite sheep and changed the way we do things, wanting to do things better, but also work with the environment. I don't consider myself an eco-terrorist like you read in the paper as a farmer, but I do realise that 90% of my neighbours have left, and that the meat industry, particularly in my farming career, has let farms down to do with the marketing of meat, and many of my neighbours have had to sell or change their farming operation. But we need flexibility in the farming sector. We need, in our area, many years ago we used to have a dairy meat operation. Then, you know, over the years it went all to wool and through the 50s, then into grain. Indeed, in Southland we used to grow 30% of New Zealand's wheat. We had changes to deer, to goats, and now to dairy. So, just as an overview of farming and how it's changed, it needs to be flexible. So to focus on, I have made comments on many things in my submission, but I want to focus on physiographics and that it's not ground truth or ready for regulation. It is a new concept and I don't want to see it locked in the plan. And I do believe that the catchment limit setting process is a more fine-grained process to deal with water quality in Southland. You will hear from Federated Farmers tomorrow that some new water quality data has come out talking about the state of waterways in Southland, and in the last 5 years water quality is flat to improving. We have low lag times and we need to concentrate on good management practices, which are obviously working, and so through their catchment limit setting process, I think is the way forward. We need to work with rural and urban, put the facts on the table, and I'm particularly excited about the low-cost testing that's only recently come out that allows you to look at the water quality on your property and understand it. Like the previous lady, we're starting to get really passionate about that. But to one or two slides here that go back to the map and a river property. So in particular, it's only 61 hectares, that particular property. The border is the blue line. You can see it follows the river in part. There was a paddock of kale that I sowed last year. And you will see that it covers two physiographic zones, riverine and glade. The dotted line is their flood bank. So on the 25th of April these were taken, so there's the paddock. If you again look at the map, you'll see that there's a lot of riverine and glade in there. The thing that was very evident was how even the crop was. So, a very even crop of regal kale. You can't see any obvious lines. Glade is not free draining and it has artificial drainage. We have no tiles in their property, so there is no tiling in there at all. No tiles on their particular property. If it was not had an element of free drainage, you would see definite line in there with poor crop. It's not there. The same as riverine is stony soils, and you would see a difference in height. The management on that particular paddock is the same. There is no difference. Again, looking up towards the line, the dominant feature, of course, is the flood bank. So I guess what I'm saying is that glade on my particular property, and that is the green piece on that original map. So I'll go back for those that are... Yeah, the lighter colour is glade, the blue is riverine. Large chunks of it are glade, no tiles, and yet it's not meant to be free draining. The riverine comes out from the stock bank through the paddocks as well. It's meant to be stony soils according to your fact sheets. And I know myself, having lived there my entire life, that in 1999 when we had a drought, there is considerable difference on what parts of properties and properties up and down the river burn off. So even within riverine there's huge variation. Over in my land that's near the river, we still have topsoil, whereas in some properties they're just stony. And so we've got different properties and variations through the physiographic zones, completely different. That's why I don't believe you can throw a blanket over it. It needs further ground truthing and further take farmers with us on what it means. It's a new concept. If you lock it in the plan, you have to change the whole plan before you can make any difference. Like the previous submitter, I'm really miffed at the fact that it's up to me to provide the science while your maps are wrong. I'm just trying to put a practical perspective across to you today. So, not locked in plan. So the next thing, what lines do matter on my property? Well, here we are. I'll get to the right slide there. So there's my flood bank. My ute would be underwater in 1999. We have 1.7 k's of stop bank on their property. It breached their bank on the 18th of November 1999 for 3 years. Not exactly in that point, slightly further downstream, but a massive flood, a huge flood. I know, if you go back to the map and you look at riverine, I can't farm riverine all the same. If it's on the other side of my flood bank, my stock will drown. So I have to think about what crops, if I grow any crops, and I don't normally grow crops. I see that as an emerging trend where people are growing crops. I know that the demonstration farm at one stage said to people that, oh no, it's fine over there, and they had baleage over there, but it got washed out in Fofo Strait. So, you know, you have to treat it differently. So, going on from there, that's the sort of land that's over there, so it's not all gravel and gorse. My rest of my submission stands. I am, like the last submitter, concerned about some of the silly stuff that's come back in the Section 42A And in particular, a good example of that is the setback distances for wintering and cultivation, where it was a minimum of 3 metres and allowed the farmer to make up what they thought was a fair distance. It's now 0 to 9 degrees, 5 metres, and over 9 degrees, 20 metres. And I know there's a FAR report out there talking on flatland only 600 millimetres. This is desktop logic, and you know, you're not going to take farmers with you if this is the sort of thing that ends up coming through. This is our largest issue ever. So please, work with farmers. We need practical solutions. Do not build a wall. This is an anti-Trump moment. We don't need a wall.
Humour.
So I believe implementation of anything to do with water quality relies on farmers' goodwill. Water quality trends are now improving, and the catchment limit process, a more fine-grained process, is where that debate should happen, with rural and urban, and not pitting farmer against farmer or rural against urban. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll see if we have questions for you. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, thank you, David. The Farm Environment Plan.
Yes.
What do you think would be a reasonable and effective one? And how would you develop it, and who would monitor it to make sure it was effective?
Yeah, well, that's a difficult. Initially, the cost, like the last submitted, the $5,000 per year, seems excessive. Like Eric mentioned, many farmers do have their own fertiliser records. I think what's going to happen is that farmers are going to take much more notice of what's happening in their own streams, for instance, and this monitoring that farmers will get into about what sort of water quality have they got. Is it better when it leaves their property than when it enters it? Would be a good way forward. Certainly having to have nutrient budgets every year, when I know in the sheep industry, a fertiliser rep says it would make no difference. It's a waste of money and we haven't got the resource to do it. So, you know, certainly talking about these things, but something that was simple, that didn't have to be updated every year, you know, would be a way forward, absolutely. So around good management practice, because I think that's the key. Mm. But I'm not saying not look at the other issues, because we're heading into limit setting process. I actually want people to know what the problem is and how it affects things, and do some testing and understand it and get carried along. But when you get things thrown at you, people, you're building a wall, guys. That's what's happening.
So have you considered the Environment South Environment Plan or a Beef and Lamb Plan?
I have considered a Beef and Lamb Plan, absolutely. I haven't done one yet. I do have extensive records since way back in the 70s of every year we put fertiliser on, and stocking rates and meat per hectare, all that stuff. I was part of SF 2000 at one stage, so, you know, when I talked about productivity gains, we've lifted our lamb weights by 50% in there, and just everything on our farm. We had to. Most of our neighbours aren't there. It comes down to your bottom line. If you're not if you're not making any money and making losses, you end up leaving the land. And I mean, we've been there a long time. We don't intend to. If my forefathers had destroyed the land, I wouldn't be there.
Mm. Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks for your submission. I've got my questions very clear.
Yeah. Do you see a correlation between good environmental practice and bottom line?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I with our property flooding, you know, a large chunk of it, I allow for that in my management. In some years, you could stock it right up and get through, but every now and again, you could lose that whole area, and then we've had years before we got the stock bank where that whole bottom property ended up with 5 or 6 inches of silt, and we had to run around with jabbing sheep for milk fever for weeks, and it was horrendous. And the bank has been fantastic, but you've got to farm for it. You know, there are people growing crops on that side, and I struggle with that because I know we haven't had a flood for a long time, but we will get a monster at some stage, and you know, you can't farm through those things if you lose your stock or you lose all your crops. So
in you talked about the increasing productivity. What have you shifted your Olsen P levels from what to what?
Way, way back, they were 8, now they're all in the 20s.
So have you done any nutrient budgeting to see how much you're keeping there, or how much might be?
We monitor our soil testing every couple of years just to make sure that we're maintaining it. Yeah. We keep our pH constant. Yeah. So from that side of it.
You haven't done an overseer or a mitigator or one of those programs to calculate?
No, well, I don't. With sheep and beef, I haven't actually got any beef at the moment. I guess the overseer thing is, you know, plus or minus 30% is quite a lot of
worst
variation. You know, so I've always said to people, you know, if you go to your bank manager and say, there's your budget, and just remember it's got a variation of plus or minus 30%, they might go, well, come on now. Yeah. So, you know, I just think particularly when it's generally recognised that sheep and beef don't have large losses anyway, and the way that I farm, I think. Okay. But I'm prepared to front up, absolutely. And that's what I think. If you're doing some testing on your property and you come up with something, absolutely prepared to front up to it. I think we've all got to front up to it. So if you look at E. coli, you've got to look at below a lot of our little townships. I mean, the state of Invercargill City's wastewater. It's an issue for everybody. We need a level playing field and some honesty on what the facts are.
Okay, thank you. Lord?
No, I think you've actually asked my question, so thanks, Dave. No questions from me.
And no further questions from me, but thanks very much for coming in this morning and making your points very clear and answer.